Shalom, everybody. I'd like to begin by thanking Yahweh for giving me the privilege, joy, and opportunity to be here. All blessings come from Him, and it is indeed a blessing to be able to be here at the conference and to be able to share with you what Yahweh has put upon my heart to be sharing with you. And what I'm sharing with you is a four-part message that is relating understanding the two-house message to the end of days, the world in which we live, showing you that this is such a serious issue that these things are happening literally right now as we are speaking. Because things are on the move and happening so fast, I use every day as much as possible, including at this conference, to check the news in Israel to see what the latest developments are. And what was on YNetNews.com today is that Mahmoud Abbas, it is reported, is planning on announcing early elections, Palestinian elections. He's planning, according to YNet News, to make this announcement next week. Now, what is the significance of that? Well, for those of you who don't have a congregation to go to on Saturday mornings, I give a weekly news update over the computer on Pal Talk, and I've been doing this for probably, I can't remember, maybe about a year and a half now, showing the weekly news and how it relates to basically the end of days teaching, which you are hearing at this conference. And it appeared to me from going back to last November, give you a background on this, on what it looked like the plans were by the governments of this world, is Ehud Olmert, the Prime Minister of Israel, he visited the United States in November. And it appears as though there was an agreement that was made at that time of a process which would lead to a PLO state, an agreement for a PLO state. And different parties had their roles to play. What their role was is to do some various confidence-building measures toward Mahmoud Abbas, which were done in December and January. Mahmoud Abbas was to separate himself from Hamas, because Hamas doesn't recognize Israel. And Mahmoud Abbas was to call for early elections. So Israel did the confidence-building measures in December and January. And he separated himself from Hamas, said that there was an impasse and couldn't make any agreement with them because Hamas wouldn't recognize Israel. And he did call for early elections. I don't remember whether it was in December or January, but he did call for elections, but he didn't set a date. Now, the other things that was going on is the international community pledged to Mahmoud Abbas that if he would do this, that they would give him guns, money, and the election would be over a Palestinian state and voting for Fatah, or voting against the Palestinian state and supporting Hamas. That's what the plan was. And once the parties did their respective things, Israel the confidence-building measures, Mahmoud Abbas calling for early election, separating himself from Hamas, the final preparation stage was a calling for an international peace meeting wherein ultimately a state would be offered so that Mahmoud Abbas could go to elections. Everything was going along smoothly, and those meetings were called. February the 2nd, there was a quartet meeting. February the 19th, there was a meeting called between Israel, the United States, and the Palestinian Authority to discuss. The diplomatic word, if you're reading your newspaper, is a political horizon. It's diplomatic talk for a PLO state. However, 1 week before that February the 19th meeting, Saudi Arabia persuaded Mahmoud Abbas of Fatah to make an agreement with Hamas, which they did. Because of that, the international community said, wait a second, you know, we're not going to play ball with Hamas, and so therefore the deal is frozen. And therefore the February 19th meeting, it was pretty much a dud. They didn't meet to discuss anything. They didn't even have a news conference afterwards. Condoleezza Rice just said, say, well, here, I showed up for the meeting because it was scheduled, but, you know, we didn't do anything. So it was frozen. Apparently, Mahmoud Abbas understood that the international community meant what they said, because then things changed again here just recently, where Hamas took over and defeated Fatah in the Gaza. Upon doing that, Mahmoud Abbas declared that that was illegal for Hamas to do, declared separation from Hamas. Immediately then, with the plan that was happening prior to February started to get on pace again. The United States has offered Mahmoud Abbas guns and money, along with Europe and the international community. And now it's being reported by Ynet News that Mahmoud Abbas is planning to call for new elections. In that article, it said that the Palestinians are able to have those elections within 90 days from when they're called, should they go forward with it. Meanwhile, Bush has called an international peace conference. So it looks like what they were planning up through February that got halted is now on the path again. And so we'll see if anything happens that freezes it this time. Of course, the answer is only time will tell. But everybody is eager to make a peace agreement. If you're following the news and events in Israel, which Alan was encouraging you to do so, and I highly encourage you to do so, I've been trying to get people that's connected to the ministry to watch news and events in Israel since I started sending out email to people who wanted to be on my list in 1996. It's critically important if you're going to do what Yeshua said, which is to watch and pray. And Shimon Peres, who was the Israeli architect, one of the architects behind the initial peace agreement, Oslo, that was signed September the 13th, 1993, he just got sworn in as president of Israel, and he said in being sworn in that Israel needs to get rid of the territories, get rid of the West Bank. And Ehud Olmert just has said the same thing in the past week. And the defense minister of Israel is Ehud Barak, and he offered 96% of the West Bank, half of Jerusalem, and a state to Yasser Arafat in 1999. So the leaders in Israel are all for giving a Palestinian state. The United States government wants to do it. Europe wants to do it. Russia wants to do it. The United Nations, there's no government figure standing in the way of not wanting this to happen. So you analyze it the way you want. I think because everyone's in agreement to do this, it's inevitable it'll happen. The only question is how long is it going to take? And I'm trying to show you from the scriptures that this is a tribulation event. If you see a Palestinian state with East Jerusalem as its capital, that is a tribulation event, but not great tribulation, or it's not the last 3.5 years. It is the domino that leads up to the last 3.5 years. And the effect of the PLO state is it will result in, I'm going to be sharing with you this in detail this session and in the last session tomorrow. What will result from a Palestinian state is this domino. It will result in a rebellion by those who believe in the Bible, in the covenant that Yahweh Yeshua made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that rebellion will declare an independent state. Now, you remember the principle Brad is sharing with you, I've shared it with you, that Yahweh has told the end from the beginning. And what happens to the forefathers happens to the descendants, or biblical history is prophecy. Therefore, the dividing of the house of Jacob into northern kingdom and southern kingdom historically is a prophecy of what will happen in the end of days. It will happen again. And the present state of Israel, it conducts its affairs much like the northern kingdom. The northern kingdom didn't want to follow Torah. The northern kingdom wanted to be like the other nations. And that's what the modern nation of Israel, the leaders of the government, that's how they're leading and directing the policies. And so there will be a rebellion by those who want to follow Torah and will not embrace the Palestinian state. That rebellion is what the Bible calls Zion, or the state of Zion. And there is a prophecy in Isaiah in chapter 28. Isaiah in chapter 28, it says, "Hear the word of Yahweh, ye scornful men that rule this people, which is in Jerusalem." It says, "Because we have made a covenant with death." This is Isaiah 28, verse 15. "And with the grave we have effected a vision." And it says, "When the overflowing scourge passes through, it will not come upon us, for we have made lies our refuge." And so it's talking about the making of a covenant with death and with the grave. Now, making a covenant or a peace agreement with terrorists who want to destroy you, if that's not a covenant with death, please tell me what one is. And so as a result, this it says, "Thus says Yahweh, I lay in Zion a stone, a foundation, a tried stone." You see the contrast between the covenant is Zion. I lay in Zion. So the contrast is the covenant versus Zion, Zion. Now, in Psalm 118, in Psalm 118 and verse 22, Psalm 118 verse 22 says, "The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone." The stone which the builders rejected has become the chief cornerstone. That verse is quoted 3 times in the New Testament, specifically referring about Yeshua. He's the stone that the builders rejected, and he's become the cornerstone, the cornerstone of what? Of Zion. He's become the cornerstone. But how many of you know, Brad was teaching the difference between Hebraic thought and Greek thought, and he said there's different levels of Hebraic thought. And so that Yeshua is the stone that the builders rejected isn't the only meaning of that verse. An alternative meaning, which I believe for that verse, which does not do away with in any part that it's speaking about Yeshua, is you remember in Zechariah chapter 12 verse 3, it's called Jerusalem is called a stone of stumbling. Okay, so the stone that the builders reject, so they have to be rejecting Jerusalem. But the stone that the builders are rejecting, the builders is a reference to the leaders of the modern nation of Israel. And the modern leaders of Israel are rejecting Jerusalem because they want to give half of it over for a Palestinian state, East Jerusalem. And they're also rejecting the West Bank, the Judea and Samaria. And by rejecting that, they're rejecting the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So Psalm 118 verse 22 is a prophecy, and the prophecy is that the stone, Jerusalem, in the West Bank, that the builders reject, that's the modern leaders, will become the head of the corner. And the corner is Messiah's kingdom. You see, before Messiah comes, the cornerstone will be laid, and that cornerstone is Zion. Messiah comes, and he builds the temple. He expands the territory from the cornerstone, from the Nile to the Euphrates, And also what he does is he comes and he actually builds the temple of the Messianic era. That's found in Ezekiel chapter 40 through 48. You'll find the details of that Messianic temple. So what's going to happen is in the West Bank, which the nation of Israel will sign over and say, you do not belong to us. We acknowledge that you are for a Palestinian state. They will renounce it. When they renounce it, those who will not accept it, that was going to be largely the settlers in the West Bank and religious Jews, but they will say, we don't acknowledge this. We are going to declare with our mouths, we're going to declare with our mouths an autonomous state. They'll make a declaration with their mouth. And the present state of Israel won't recognize it. The United States won't recognize it. Europe won't recognize it. Russia won't recognize it. The United Nations won't recognize it. No one on the earth will recognize it. No governments will recognize it, except for the only ones that will show sympathy and identify with it. There's only those who believe in the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And so there, from that, there's got to be a division into two states. Now, we'll see when that happens what that autonomous state gets called. The Bible calls it Zion. So we'll see whether there's an Israel and a Zion. Now if you look at Ezekiel in chapter 37, if you look at Ezekiel chapter 37, where it begins in verse 15 talking about Ephraim and Judah coming together to be one, in verse 22 it says, I will make them one nation in the land upon the mountains of Israel, and one sovereign will be sovereign over them all, and they will no longer be two nations, and they will no longer be divided into two kingdoms. Okay, so he's got to make them one in the mountains of Israel, and they will no more be two kingdoms or two nations. Like, what's it referring to? The historical division between northern kingdom and southern kingdom? Is that what he's referring to? No more be two kingdoms? Or is he referring to, in the end of days, the split and the divide between Israel and the autonomous state that would be declared? Which one's it talking about? The answer is yes. You see, when everyone says which one is it that or that, you know, they're setting you up. It's Greek thinking. The answer is yes. That the creation of a Palestinian state results in the judgment upon the nations. And that's when there's nuclear exchange. Zechariah chapter 14, beginning in verse 12, says, this is the plague with which Yahweh will smite the nations that came up against Jerusalem. Their flesh will melt as they stand upon their feet. So that's nuclear exchange. So once you have a creation of a PLO state, you have judgment upon the nations. And specifically, there's a judgment that comes upon Babylon. The Babylonian system, which is generically what Babylon is everything and anything that opposes the God of Israel. His Torah and his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, which is played out financial Babylon, political Babylon, religious Babylon. There's a literal land of Babylon, and there's a spiritual land of Babylon. There's a judgment of the nations. And this is a replay of what happened in Egypt. The way the children of Israel came out of Egypt was when Egypt was judged with plagues. The way the exiles of Israel come out of the nations of the world is when there's judgment upon the nations, and that judgment is in the form of plagues. Right? Zechariah 14, verse 1. This is the plague where Yahweh will smite those who come against Jerusalem. And there, according to Revelation chapter 12, there is 3.5 years that is designated for the exiles to return home. And according to Revelation chapter 7, it's the 144,000 who lead the exiles back. And even as the children of Israel came out of Egypt in camps, they will be led back to the land in camps. That's the big picture. And Yahweh likes to tell the big picture. You know what he made a promise with Abraham. You know what he said? He gave him the big picture. Follow me and I'll make all these promises. He didn't tell him the details. You see? And so Yahweh once again tells us the big picture, but he doesn't tell us the details. What's between the camp and the 3.5 years in getting there? Where's the steps? He's not going to tell you until you put your foot in the water and begin the process. So that is the bigger picture that I'm going to lay out for you in greater detail. But that's the big picture. A PLO state brings about a rebellion, and that rebellion brings about a judgment of the nations. Of course, one of the nations that will get judged and will probably have the severest judgment is the United States of America. He to as much is given, much is required. And so what will happen in this country is we will have terrorism attacks, which will involve in some form or fashion a nuclear terrorist attack. And that will collapse the economy of the United States of America. Anyone who's following economics at all knows that in the last 5 years, our dollar, in essence, has collapsed. Because it's gone slow, no one's calling it a collapse. When I went to South Africa it was 2002, a dollar was worth 12 rand. I could not believe what I could buy over there. I could buy like 5 shirts for $50. I mean, I could like take the whole store and not pay anything for it. Everything was so cheap. I just couldn't believe how cheap things were. But now, the dollar has lost half of its value against the rand. It's only worth 6 or 7 rand now. 5 years ago, I've made several trips to Canada, and the Canadian dollar is only 50 cents. Someone just told me here at the conference it's 96 cents now. It's lost half of its value. I went to Australia and New Zealand January of 2003, and their currencies was 50 cents to the dollar. The last I checked, they were like 80 cents. So the dollar has already crashed. They just haven't called it that. It's dropped 30 to 50%. And the things that's causing it to happen aren't going to be reversed. It's our trade deficit with China, and that's not going to reverse itself. And it's our deficits, our spending deficits in Washington, and that's not going to change itself either. And so right now, China has over $3 trillion of our money, because, you know, when we buy our goods, they get dollars for them, and so they got all these dollars. And so we no longer control our economic destiny because foreigners own our money, and if they decide they're not going to buy our debt, then guess what? There's a debt crisis. And so we're already beginning to see that in the housing market, and the housing market is starting to not do well, because the housing market was sustained by low interest rates. And the discount rate dropped to 1% here not too long ago. Recently, they've moved it back up to 5%. But mortgage rates came down. And see, most people buy their houses based upon their payment. They really don't care, you know, what the number is, because they can't compute that number anyhow. Can you actually see, you know, $100,000, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 Have you ever seen it stacked up? No, it's just a number in your mind. The pile has no reality to you. People buy a payment. And so there's places like, a couple years ago in San Diego, California, I read in USA Today that several years ago that 60% of all the houses that were bought in that area was bought with adjustable mortgages, and a great many, I forget the percentage now, the houses were bought and the payments were interest only. That's because the average house in the San Diego area is $500,000-$600,000, and how can the average person afford to pay a payment of that much? And so they can only afford X amount in their payment. And so now the lenders come and say, hey, if it's interest only, instead of paying, you know, $1,500 a month, you'll only be $700 a month. And they say, well, we can afford $700 a month, you know, let's go for it. And so they do these interest-only loans and adjustable loans. Then all of a sudden, the Federal Reserve raises the interest rates from 1 to 5%, and now your rate adjusts, and they say, oh, we got a housing crisis. Well, you know who really planned the interest rates going down and knowing that the lending policies would be that way and then ultimately there'd be a crisis? The bankers, of course, knew that that was the yo-yo that was going to happen. And so we are ready for the dollar to collapse at any moment. We're in no way to protect it. So since the dollar is a reserve currency in the world, it's going to affect the entire world. And so the world's got to be in panic when the United States economy and the dollar collapses. And so the question is, what is the world going to do to resolve this massive problem? Well, they're going to see that the problem is that the world's economy is tied to one country's currency, which made the world unstable. And so the world's got to say, if we had a world currency that's not tied to one country, it's more stabilizing because, you know, if one country has problems, the rest of the world may not have problems. It's not going to affect the currency of the world. And so from the collapse of the United States, the world has got to organize into one world government with one world currency, and they're going to replace the dollar with the Amero. Those of you who are following the news, the planners want to unite the United States, Canada, and Mexico into a North American Union. And so, from a PLO state, there's a rebellion, judgment upon the nations, there'll be judgment upon the United States, collapse of the economy, the world reorganizes into one world government. According to Revelation chapter 12, there's two great signs in the heavens. One is the state of Zion, and the other is one world government, and for 3.5 years they wage a war against each other, that the Messiah comes and fights for Zion, and he's the stone that crushes the 10 toes. That's the outline. And if you decide for yourself, but it looks like to me that we're there. But if we are there, and these things, you know, these things I just told you, you can attest to that they are happening in our world. They are literally happening in our world. There is a peace process going on. You go to the financial pages and look to see what the dollar was worth 5 years ago and what it's worth now. You know, there's housing problems. We have a massive trade deficit with China. I'm not making this up. You can verify that these things I'm telling you is all reality. But why don't people realize where we're at and why don't they see what it means? It is because, and this is what Yahweh showed me here right before came up here, is that in 1 Thessalonians in chapter 5, and verse 2, it says the following. Let me find it here. It says that the day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night. 1 Thessalonians in chapter 5 and verse 2, Paul is writing, and he says, "For you yourselves know very well that the day of Yahweh comes as a thief in the night." What have I been sharing with you? The day of Yahweh and the things that happen the day of Yahweh. Paul says it comes as a thief in the night. Now let's look what Peter says. 2 Peter in chapter 3 and verse 8. "But beloved, let not this one matter be hidden from you, that with Yahweh one day is 1,000 years and 1,000 years is one day." Verse 10. "But the day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night." So we're told by Paul and Peter that this day of Yahweh will come as a thief in the night. And you know what? When a thief comes in the night, you're not expecting the thief to come in the night. So that day will come upon the world and even Yahweh's people unsuspectingly. Why? The reason is this. His people's not watching. Because if we go to Matthew in chapter 24, if we go to Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, Messiah is sitting on the Mount of Olives and they say, "What shall be the sign of your coming and of the end of the age?" You know, I just realized by looking at the Hebrew, you know, Brad's encouraging you to look into the Hebrew language because the Bible calls in Zechariah chapter 3, verse 9, Hebrew a pure language. You'll find pure theology in the language. Now, you're familiar with the New Testament that says that the Jews require a sign. Well, I was looking at the Hebrew, and I was looking at the word Zion. Zion is what it is in Hebrew. And so it says, it says in the Strong's that it's the same as the Hebrew word Zion. The only difference between Zion and Zion are vowels, and in the biblical text, and even in the newspapers in Israel, there aren't any vowels. So Zion and Zion has the exact same Hebrew letters. Ask Brad that a Hebrew word, Hebrew root word that contains the same letters, the words that are related that have those same letters are thematically associated and linked in concept with each other. Is that right, Brad? Okay, so Zion and Zion, same Hebrew letters. Zion means a sign, a guidepost. So when it says the Jews require a sign, that could be rendered in Hebrew, the Jews require Zion. And that is true. You know why? Because you go to an Orthodox Jew and you say, "Do you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah?" They'll say, "No." Why not? Because the Messiah comes and ends the exile. He comes and sets up a kingdom, and he redeems Zion. The reason why he's not the Messiah is because I require Zion. So it says in Matthew chapter 24, verse 3, he sat on the Mount of Olives and said, "What shall be the sign of your coming? What shall be the Zion of your coming? What shall be?" How do I know when Zion comes? What am I going to be looking for? He says, "Well, you know, these things are going to happen." He goes through Matthew chapter 24. And then in verse 42, he says this, "Watch, therefore, for you do not know what hour your master is coming. And know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come, watch for his coming," the subject is his coming, "watch for his coming, for if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would come," watch for his coming. What's the thief? The day of the Lord, the day of Yahweh. "For if he would have known when the day of Yahweh was coming, he would have watched." And then he says in verse 43, "And know this," verse 43, "know this, that if the master of the house had known what hour the thief would have come," verse 44, "because of this, be ready too, for the Son of Man is coming in an hour." Bible translates it, "be ready too," but the King James says, "watch." "Watch, for the Son of Man is coming at an hour when you do not expect him." So when's he coming? He's coming in the day of Yahweh. The prophets are clear. That's when he comes. But you're not expecting him because that day comes as a thief and you're not watching. So, however, Yahweh has set watchmen upon the walls of Mount Zion, on Jerusalem. And so in Jeremiah, in chapter 31 and verse 6, it says, "For there shall be a day that the watchmen cry on Mount Ephraim, arise and let us go to Zion." The watchman says, "Let's go to Zion. Now, in Ezekiel, in chapter 33, and verse 1, it says, "The word of Yahweh came unto me, saying, Son of man, speak to the children of your people, and say, when you see a sword come upon the land." Well, in the end of days, what causes a sword to come upon the land? A PLO state, and dividing Jerusalem. And the people of the land shall take a man for their borders, and shall make him their watchman. And he sees the sword coming from the land, he shall blow the ram's horn and warn the people. Notice that the watchman is to blow the shofar and to warn the people. What does it say in Joel in chapter 2 and verse 1? "Blow a shofar in Zion. Sound an alarm on my holy mountain, for the day of Yahweh comes." So the watchman is going to blow a shofar to Zion and say, "Listen, the day of Yahweh comes." Zion is the people that are seeking, who are repenting, following Torah, and understand that they're a part of the redemption in the end of days. And it says in Ezekiel 33:4, "Whoever shall hear the sound of the ram's horn and shall not take warning, if the sword comes and takes him away, his blood shall be upon his own head. He heard the sound of the ram's horn, but he did not take warning. His blood is on himself. But he who takes warning shall be delivered. But if the watchman sees the sword coming and does not blow the ram's horn, and the people be not warned, and the sword comes and takes away any being from among them, he is taken away in his crookedness, and his blood I will require at the watchman's hand. So you, son of man, I've made you a watchman for the house of Israel, and you shall hear a word from my mouth, and you shall warn them for me." So one way of looking at this four part message that I'm sharing with you at this conference is, it's a foundation of two owls that connects it to the day of Yahweh, what's going on in the world, to show you how close we are to these events, and that you need to be watching and you need to be prepared. It is, in essence, a watchman message. So now, let us look at, I just painted you the big picture now. I'm going to now share with you the details of that big picture. And so let's begin to look at these details. Well, the day of Yahweh, there is a conflict between Jacob and Esau. It's called Jacob's trouble. Let's look at the characteristics of that conflict. Remember, the end is told in the beginning. And if that is the case, that the foreshadowing of the end of days Jacob and Esau battle would be foretold in the beginning. That beginning is going to be in the book of Genesis. Genesis chapter 25, we have the birth of Jacob and Esau. It says in verse 21 through 23, "Isaac entreated Yahweh for his wife because she was barren, and Yahweh was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled together within her and said, If it be so, why am I thus? And she went to inquire of Yahweh. And Yahweh said, Two nations are in your womb, and two manner of people will be separated from your bowels. The one will be stronger than the other, and the other will serve the younger." So their birth is a prophecy that they're going to be battling with each other from the time of their birth to the end of days. And then in Genesis chapter 31, the setting is that Jacob had been serving Laban for 14 years. Right? He'd been serving Laban for 14 years. I don't know whether this is a connection or not, but I'll throw it out. Oslo was signed September the 13th, 1993. Bush has tentatively scheduled a peace conference for September of 2007. If this is the moment where the peace will be made, guess how long of time that is? 14 years. And so after Jacob serves Laban for 14 years, it says, Laban's son says, Jacob has taken away all that was our father's. That's an accusation, or it's a rise of anti-Semitism. Any of you watching the news and seeing that there's a rise of anti-Semitism in Europe and around the world? And Jacob beheld the countenance of Laban, it was not toward him as before. And Yahweh said to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers, and I will be with you. And he carried away all his cattle and his goods, which he had gotten. And so, after these 14 years, Yahweh says to Jacob, return to the land of your fathers, and I will be with you. Why did he have to add, I will be with you? Because in his mind, it's going to be challenging. Now, if you go speak to, you know, your logical thinking family and say, Yahweh's will for me is to go to the land of Israel and go to the mountains of Israel, they're going to think that you've lost your lulus. And also, not only that, but, you know, there's a challenge in your own mind as well. The only way you can do it is if you believe Yahweh will be with you. And so Jacob sent messengers before him to Esau his brother in the land of Seir, the country of Edom. And he commanded him, saying, thus you shall speak to my lord Esau. You see, he regarded Esau as a master. Your servant Jacob says thus, I have sojourned with Laban and stayed with you now. And verse 5 says, I have oxen and donkeys and manservants and men servants. And so he's going to offer him peace. He's going to offer him peace. When he's going back to the land, he's offering him peace. But the messengers return to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and he comes to meet you, and 400 men with him. You see, Jacob wants to make peace. Israel and the United States says they want to make peace. But what is what's Syria and Iran and Hamas and Fatah doing? They're all arming for war, 400 men with them. And when Jacob's trying to make peace, and Esau is meeting Jacob, and he's preparing for war, the result is the following. Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed. He was afraid and distressed. This is what Jeremiah picks up in Jeremiah 30 verse 7 and calls the time of distress is Jacob's trouble in the end of days. It comes from the trying to make peace with Esau. And as a result of Jacob being greatly afraid and distressed, he was left alone. Jacob was left alone. And so, there's a scripture in the Bible saying, I believe it's Jeremiah in chapter 30 and verse 17. Let's take a look at it. Jeremiah 30 and verse 17 says the following. It says, I will restore health unto you, and I will heal you of your wounds, says Yahweh. For they called you an outcast, saying, this is Zion, which no man seeks after. This is Zion, which no man seeks after. Well, if you identify with Zion and no man seeks after it, in other words, your family's not saying, oh, great. In other words, your government's not saying, oh, great. The world's not saying, oh, great. Your religious leaders aren't saying, oh, great. This is Zion, which no man seeks after. See, he was left alone. That means he's in Zion. And there, in Zion, he wrestled with a man until the breaking of the day. What is the day referring to? The day of Yahweh. And so he wrestled with the Messiah. What does Judaism got to wrestle with? Yeshua really is the Messiah? What does evangelical Christianity got to wrestle with? You mean that there's no pre-trib rapture? And I'm not going to heaven, but I'm supposed to go to the land? And the reason why all this is happening, because we're not following Torah? Really? I don't know about that one. Really? But until the breaking of the day. You see, it's happening during the night time of the day, tribulation. And he wrestles until the breaking of the day. The breaking of the day is when Messiah sits his seat down on the Mount of Olives. So, Jacob was greatly afraid and distressed, is where Jeremiah 30 verse 7 says that that day is Jacob's trouble. Now, in Genesis chapter 33, in verse 4 it says, Esau ran toward him and kissed him. I have highlighted here in the Hebrew text, and he kissed him. And in the Hebrew text, there are dots above the Hebrew letters where it says, and he kissed him. And you look at the other Hebrew words, there's not dots over those. Dots is not a Hebrew letter. It's not a Hebrew vowel. It's just something that was added to the letters and vowels. And so the question is, why is it there? It's because it literally says he kissed him. But the rabbis explain that while the text says he literally kissed him, in his heart, he wanted to bite him, or he had enmity against him. And so Messiah identifies with this, and you see this peace process is the kiss of death. Because you know what they do? They shake their hands, and after, in the Middle East, after they shake their hands, they go. But is it sincere kissing? Is it sincere embracing? No, it's insincere. It is the dot, dot, dot. Now, you remember when Judas came and kissed Yeshua? That was an allusion to the kiss of Esau. The insincere kiss. Now let's look at the characteristics of this battle between Jacob and Esau. First of all, we need to realize that Esau and Edom and Mount Seir are synonymous terms in the Bible. Genesis 36:8. Thus dwelt Esau in Mount Seir. Esau is Edom. Esau is Edom, and Esau is in Mount Seir. So when you see Edom, Esau, or Mount Seir in the Bible, it's all referring to Esau. Ezekiel chapter 35 is a chapter written against Mount Seir or against Esau. Now, if you look at the word Seir in the Strong's, do you know what it means? It means a male goat. And the children of Israel likened the sheep. This is a battle between the sheep and the goats. O Mount Seir, I am against you. And it says, you've shed the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword. You know what we call the shedding of the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword? We call it homicide or suicide bombings. But notice it says by the sword. Well, you know what one of the symbols of Islam is? The sword. So it's an illusion that Esau would be following Islam. But notice when it's happening. In the time of their calamity. What is the time of their calamity? The tribulation period. But now let's look how the verse ends. It's not only the time of their calamity, but in the time that their iniquity had an end. You know what iniquity is? Sin. And sin is breaking the covenant. The consequence of breaking the covenant was exile in the nation. The end of the iniquity is the end of the exile. So they're shedding the blood of the children of Israel during the tribulation at the time when the exile is about to be over. And then, Ezekiel 36:5, it says, surely in the fire of my jealousy have I spoken against the resident of the heathen, and the King James says against all Idumea. Idumea is just the Latin form of the biblical name Esau, or Edom. So he's spoken against Esau. Now, continuing in Ezekiel in chapter 36, from Ezekiel chapter 35, which is a judgment against Esau, it says, Son of man, prophesy to the mountains of Israel, and ye mountains of Israel, hear the word of Yahweh. The mountains of Israel is Judea and Samaria, the West Bank. And it says, thus say Yahweh, the enemy has said against you, Aha, even the ancient high places are ours in possession. So the prophecy to the mountains of Israel is that the enemy, who's defined as Esau, would say that the mountains of Israel or the West Bank belongs to them. Okay, is there anybody in the world that's saying that the West Bank belongs to them? They don't call themselves Esau, they call themselves the Palestinians. And do you know why Judah, you know why the Jews are not recognizing this? Because they see the Arab world totally and exclusively as Ishmael. And they see Christianity as Esau. So they're not seeing that the prophecy says that that this would be happening because they've looking at the wrong, their definition is skewing the truth here. And so the prophecy is that the enemy would say the mountains of Israel is theirs. And then in verse 5 it says, Yahweh says, in the fire of my jealousy. When is the fire of his jealousy? The fire of his jealousy is over the controversy of Zion, and it's the judgment of the nations for dividing the land. If we go to Isaiah in chapter 34 and verse 8, it says, for it is the day of Yahweh's vengeance for the controversy of Zion. The day of his vengeance is also the fire of his jealousy. So in the fire of my jealousy, that is with the creation of the state of Zion and when he judges the nations for creating a PLO state, dividing Jerusalem, I spoke against the heathen, the judging of the nations, and against Esau, who has appointed my land, that is the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, for their possession, that is a PLO state, with the joy of all their heart, they got their national homeland, with the spiteful minds to cast it for a prey. They want to use a legal state to bring in weapons and then use those weapons to rid and to overtake the rest of the land of Israel. There's only 9 miles from the shortest part of the West Bank to the Mediterranean. 9 miles. They bring in weapons, cut off those 9 miles, split Israel in two. And so, with the joy of all their heart, with despiteful minds. Let me throw out a thought for you that I can't say 100% is so, but you got to keep an open mind when it comes to the end of days. Remember Brad was talking about Hebrew thought and Greek thought? Greek thought is, the prophecies are going to happen this way, and that's the way I've been taught it, that's the way I believe it, and that's the way I correctly interpret it, and it's that way, and it's no other way, and I'll consider no other way. Now you want to argue? That's Greek thought. Hebraic thought is, well, I know, you know, it could play out this way, it could play out that way. Yeah, I do know those prophecies are true. And I got to look for that, but I got to keep an open mind that perhaps it's not exactly the way I thought. And let me give you a thought for that. And like I said, I'm not being adamant that this is it. I'm saying look out, it could be. And I'm talking about the abomination of desolation. You see, they want to have their land for their possession with the joy of all their heart. Now, who would the quote-unquote Palestinians regard as the father of their nation? Can you tell me? This is an easy question. Yasser Arafat. And do you know that when he died, they buried him in a movable casket? And that is because it said when he died, and they have stated several times that they said that one day they want to take his body to the Temple Mount. And because they want to give him praise for him being the father and making all of this possible. And so I think they will take his body to the Temple Mount and say, thank you, Yasser Arafat, for your work in giving us a state and access to the Temple Mount. And we're going to put your body right up there, you know, by the mosque that's up there. What if that's the abomination of desolation? That a murderer and a terrorist gets praised on the holiest place in the world, the Temple Mount. rather than an individual, you know, that's a political leader saying, standing up there and saying, worship me, I'm God. So is it or is it not? I don't know, but this I can tell you, if I live long enough and if I live to be these days, one of the two's got to happen. I'll know which one it is. We'll have to see. Now, Obadiah chapter 1, this book of the Bible is only written as a prophecy against Edom or Esau, and the context is in the day of Yahweh. Obadiah chapter 1, verse 15, the day of Yahweh. And it says concerning Edom or Esau, the pride of your heart has deceived you, you that dwell in the clefts of the rock. The word cleft is the Strong's number 2288, and it means a place of concealment or constraint. Do you realize we claim we can't find Bin Laden because he's hiding in caves? A characteristic of Esau is he, in the day of Yahweh, he dwells in the caves of the rock. And historically, Esau dwelt in Mount Seir. So, what have we looked at so far? Shedding the blood of the children of Israel by the source, shedding the blood of the children of Israel by the force of the sword. We looked at saying the mountains of Israel is his possession, and he's dwelling in the caves of the rock. Now, Obadiah chapter 1, verse 10 says, for your violence against your brother Jacob, shame will cover you, and you'll be cut off forever. The word violence is Strong's number 2555. The way you pronounce that in Hebrew is Hamas. For the Hamas against you. Guess why they're saying that there's a problem? Well, Hamas, they're our enemy. So there's, it says in the Hebrew, for the Hamas against you. Yahweh has coded in the Hebrew the issue. Now, Daniel chapter 9, verse 11, or we can say it this way, Daniel 9:1-1. It says, all Israel has transgressed the Torah even by departing, that they may not obey your voice. Therefore the curse is poured upon us, the oath that is written in the Torah of Moses, the servant of Elohim, because we've sinned against him. The word curse is the Strong's number 423. It consists of the Hebrew letters Aleph, Lamed, and He. And you could render that as Allah, for the Allah against you. So it's not only Hamas, but the Allah against you. See, in principle, the God of Israel, in order to punish his people who are not following the Torah, he sends their enemies against them. You know, in Jeremiah chapter 25, Nebuchadnezzar is called my servant. And you know that the Assyrians is called the rod of my anger. And so Allah and Hamas is his agent of punishment against Israel for transgressing the Torah. Now in Daniel chapter 2, Nebuchadnezzar has a dream. And we're familiar with this. His dream was there was a head of gold, Babylon, and arms of silver, Media Persia, and then thigh of brass, Greece, and then two legs of iron, Rome, and then 10 toes. So the kingdom in the end of days is the 10 toes because the stone comes and crushes the 10 toes. The stone is the Messiah, and he crushes the 10 toes, and he sets up his kingdom. Now, if we go to Daniel chapter 2 and verse 41, it says, when you saw the feet and toes, part of potter's clay and part of iron, the kingdom will be divided, but there shall be in it of the strength of an iron, for as much as you saw the iron mixed with clay. The 10 toes, the iron mixed with clay. The word mixed is the Strong's number 6151, and it's the Aramaic word Arab. The iron, which represents Rome, or the Europe, or the West, is mixed with, as Arab, with clay. I believe this is referring that the Western world is trying to merge itself and be friends with the Islamic world. Is that happening? Well, you remember when Clinton was president, we was over there in Kosovo, and we had to do something regarding the ethnic Albanians. Remember the ethnic Albanians? You know why the media always said ethnic Albanians, ethnic Albanians, ethnic Albanians? Because you know who the ethnic Albanians are? They're the Muslims. And so what if the media said, we need to go over there in Yugoslavia, we need to be involved in the issues over there, we need to send our, have our troops over there, part of the UN force, to help the Muslims against the Serbs. You know who the Serbs ethnically are? Christians. So we were favoring the Muslims over the Christians, but what if we told America that we were favoring the Muslims over the Christians? They probably wouldn't go with that. So, you know, the American people are kind of ignorant about that area of the world, so if you call them the Serbs versus the ethnic Albanians, no one knows any different. And they can accomplish their objective of what they're trying to do. The same way. We're being told in the polls that the two Democratic leaders right now is Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama. You know, the Democrats are excited about Barack Obama. Well, do you know the background of Barack Obama is he's an Islam? He's a Muslim. And so why don't they say Barack Obama the Muslim? Because if the American people knew that he was Muslim, they wouldn't vote for him. But they say he's a charismatic Afro-American leader. And he joins the United Church of Christ. So they think, hey, he's a good Democrat. Let's vote for him. And so, what's happening in Europe? Europe is inviting all the Muslims over there. You know, England is being overtaken by the Muslims. And the United States is trying to make friends with Saudi Arabia and Iran, and they'll overthrow the governments of Iran and Iraq. And they want to work with the Arab world. You see, the United States is trying to bring about a democratic Iraqi government and a democratic PLO state. So they're trying to take iron values and mix them, Arab, with clay. And the prophecy says that they don't mix, they don't work. And you want to know why our policy is failing in Iraq? You know why there won't be legitimate democratic elections? Because see, Bush said, you know, democracies don't go to war with each other. So if we have a democratic PLO state, then, you know, they'll never fight. Well, that's what the prophecy said. The iron is mixed with clay. And they don't mix. But they'll attempt to mix with each other. Psalm 83 talks about a confederacy that comes against Israel in the end of days. The enemy has made a tumult, and they that hate you have lifted up their head. They've taken crafty counsel against your people and consulted against your hidden ones. They've said, come and let us cut them off from being a nation, that the name of Israel be no more in remembrance. Who's this confederation? It's under the umbrella of Edom, the tabernacles of Edom, or the tents of Edom. So the whole confederacy is called the house of Edom, or the tabernacle of Edom, which consists of the Ishmaelites, Moab, the Hagarines, Gebal, Ammon, Amalek, Philistines, Tyre, Asher, and the children of Lot. Now, the Messiah, when he returns at his second coming, he's going to be defeating Esau. It says, Isaiah 63:1, who is this that comes from Edom with dyed garments from Bozrah? This that is glorious in his peril, traveling in the greatness of his strength. I that speak in righteousness, mighty to save. Who's he that speaks in righteousness that's mighty to save? Yeshua, and he's coming back as a warrior, and he's not only fighting against the nations, but he's fighting against Esau. Why are you red in your apparel and your garments like him that treads in the wine fat? He's bloody. He was clothed with, Revelation 19, verse 13, it says, he was clothed with a vesture dipped in blood. His name is called the Word of Elohim. Now what I'm going to be doing in the remaining 20 minutes I have is share with you the controversy of Zion and who or what is Zion in the end of days and what is the controversy. In short, the controversy is over the land. Did Yahweh make a covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? Or are the nations going to declare that covenant to be no longer valid? Who or what is Zion? Zion is a term for the people of the God of Israel. Zion is a term for the land of Israel itself. The Torah will go forth from Zion. Zion is the fulfillment of the covenant made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Zion is a term that's used for the end of the exile of Jacob. Zion is also a term that refers to messianic times. And Zion is a term when the Messiah, Yeshua, has ended the exile and he's dwelling with his people in his kingdom. All of those thoughts are associated with Zion. But there's a misunderstanding of who or what Zion is in Christianity and even evangelical Christianity, because they view Zion as the present state of Israel, or they view Zion as the Jewish people. So when you say, I love Zion, you're saying, I love the land of Israel, which Zion is the land of Israel, but and I love the Jewish people, and you are supposed to love the Jewish people. But your definition is Zion is the Jewish people, and I'm supposed to support the Jewish people in that covenant, yet I'm going in pre-trib rapture. You don't know what Zion is. So therefore, you won't do the right thing in the end of days because you don't have a biblical definition of Zion. And so, you know, if any of you watch, I listen to Israel National Radio, Tovia Singer and Tamar Yonah's radio programs are very good. And they're really pro-Bible, pro-Israel, love Yahweh. And Tovia always comes on his program and he says, for all the lovers of Zion around the world, and he's referring to Israel and the Jews. And so when you're reading, you're supposed to love Zion, they read, you're supposed to love the Jews. And are you supposed to love the Jews? Yes. But Zion is what I'm going to be about to show you. That's the definition. It's not just Jews, especially Jews, who are not following Torah, who are secular. So Zion is a term for the people of Yahweh, Isaiah 51:16. I have put my words in your mouth, and I have covered you in the shadow of my hand, that I may plant the heavens and lay the foundations of the earth, and say unto Zion, you are my people. So Zion is a term for the people of the God of Israel. Are Jews that believe in Yahweh, want to follow Torah, and believe in the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, does Yahweh regard them as his people? Yeah. So Jews are a part of Zion, but Zion is more than just the Jews. Zion is a term for the land of Israel itself. Blow a trumpet in Zion. Sound an alarm on my holy mountain. Let all the inhabitants of the land tremble. Blow a trumpet. Let the inhabitants of the land tremble. When Messiah comes and sets up his kingdom, the Torah will go forth from Zion. Isaiah 2:3. Many people shall go and say, come, and let us go to the mountain of Yahweh, to the house of the Elohim of Jacob. He will teach us his ways, we will walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the Torah, and the word of Yahweh from Jerusalem. If Zion is the redeemed of Yahweh in the end of days, the exiles of Israel, and also Zion is a term for those who's going to be, that the Torah will go forth out of, if you don't believe in following Torah, how can you have the Torah go forth from you? If you are going to rule and reign with Messiah and his kingdom, but yet you don't believe in Torah, how can you be Zion of which the Torah has got to go forth from? So the Torah has got to go forth from the Messiah, from Jerusalem, but also a people that Messiah is ruling and reigning with. They're going to be teaching Torah. But in order to teach Torah to the nations, that means you're a priest. And it says in Hosea 4:6 that if you reject the Torah, you will not be a priest. So we have most of Christianity that aren't biblical. Zion won't be ruling and reigning with Messiah in his kingdom because they're not embracing Torah. Now, we need to realize it was Yeshua that made covenant with Abraham. Yeshua made covenant with Abraham. And in Genesis 17:1, the one that made covenant with Abraham said, I am Almighty Elohim. I am El Shaddai. I am El Shaddai. Revelation 1, when it says about Yeshua, I'm the Alpha, the Omega, or the Aleph and the Tav, the beginning and the ending, says Yahweh, which is, which was, which is to come. See, this is talking about Yeshua. He comes with clouds and every eye will see him. And it says about him, he is the one which is, which was, which is to come, which is the definition of Yahweh. Yeshua is Yahweh, the Almighty. Yeshua is the Almighty. And the Almighty appeared to Abram. Well, in Genesis 17:7, it says, I will establish my covenant between me and you and your seed after you. I will make my covenant between you and your seed. Genesis 17:7. Paul quotes that verse and says in Galatians 3:16 that it says seed, not seeds, and the seed is Messiah. Messiah made covenant with Abraham. And if you are Messiahs, you are an heir of the promise. What did he promise Abraham? A son. He promised him a land. And so if Christians are saying, if a Christian Zionist, if evangelical Christians are saying, we love you Jews over there, we love you, but we're going in pre-trib rapture, we endorse the covenant that is for you over there. They don't even know Galatians. You know that book of the Bible that they quote all the time when you ever get into a Torah discussion with them? But in Galatians it says, you know, but in Galatians it says, if you are Messiah, you are Abraham's seed, you're an heir according to the promise. Which means, he's given you that land. And guess what? If you say, no, that land isn't for me, you know what you're doing? You're being like Esau. You're despising your birthright. You're despising your inheritance. It says, Isaiah 51, hearken to me, you that follow after righteousness, you that seek Yahweh. Look unto Abraham, your father. When it says, look to Abraham, what does it mean? It means, look to the covenant that was made with Abraham. Because when you look to the covenant that was made to Abraham, that's how Yahweh's got to comfort Zion. Why? Because Zion's going to believe and stand for the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The comforting of Zion, look unto Abraham your father, I will comfort Zion. The comfort of Zion is the end of the exile. Jeremiah 31, he that scattered Israel will gather him, they will come and sing in the height of Zion, then will the virgin rejoice in the dance, the young men are all together, for I will turn their mourning into joy, I will comfort them. Look unto Abraham, I will comfort Zion. The comfort is the end of the exile. So, believe the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and that's how Zion is going to get comforted. We can see how Zion is associated with the end of the exile of Jacob. Psalm 147, verse 2. Yahweh builds up Jerusalem. What is the building up of Jerusalem? He gathers together the outcasts of Israel. Any of you familiar with the song in evangelical Christianity? The Lord is building Jerusalem. The Lord is building Jerusalem. Gathering together the outcasts of Israel. Healing broken hearts. Binding up their wounds. You know, I've always loved singing that song. And every time it is sung in church, I mean, the place gets up. They stand. They shout. And they really get into it. They're not dead when they sing that song. But the interesting thing is, they don't know what they're singing about. They're singing about the end of the exile, of which they don't know that they're a part of. When does Messiah return? It says in Psalm 102, verse 13, you will arise and have mercy upon Zion, for the time to favor her, yea, this time has come. When Yahweh builds up Zion, he will appear in his glory. Who's the one that's going to appear in his glory? Yeshua. When has he got to come? When he builds up Zion. What is the building up of Zion? He's gathering together the outcasts of Israel. Messiah will not come until the exiles of Israel are redeemed and gathered back to the land. And that happens during the Messianic era as a result of the creation of a PLO state. It's designated for the last 3.5 years. Now, in Isaiah 8:17, it says, I will wait upon Yahweh that hides his face from the house of Jacob, and I will look for him. Notice the house of Jacob is looking for the Messiah. Orthodox Jews are looking for the Messiah. And Christians are looking for the Messiah. And so they're looking for him. And it says, verse 18, Yahweh of hosts, he dwells in Mount Zion. That's Yeshua. He dwells in Mount Zion. Joel 3:16 says, he will roar out of Zion. Yeshua is the lion of the tribe of Judah. And the lion roars. When is Yeshua going to get up and he is going to roar out of Zion? Zion is what is established from the rebellion against the PLO state. when that state gets established, that's when he comes and he fights and he roars for Zion. Because he's defending the covenant that was made with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Now, Deuteronomy 32 verse 9 says, Jacob is the inheritance of the God of Israel. Jacob is the inheritance. But then in Exodus chapter 6 verse 8, it says the land of Israel is the inheritance or the heritage of the nation of Israel. Deuteronomy 33:4 says the Torah is the inheritance. Let's go back and look at that again. Jacob is the inheritance of Yahweh. Jacob is the inheritance of Yahweh. But the land of Israel is the inheritance of Jacob. And the Torah is the inheritance of Jacob. So therefore, we have the unity of the Messiah, his people, and the land, and Torah. So what is Zion? It is Yahweh's people redeemed, living in the land, following the Torah, and acknowledging the Messiah. That's biblical Zion. But look at our situation today. Christianity rightly believes that Yeshua is Messiah, but they say, no, no, the Jews are the people, and he's given them the land, and they follow Torah. There's a disconnect from this unity. The Jews say we're the people, we have the land, we're following the Torah, but they don't acknowledge the Messiah. What is the controversy of Zion? The controversy of Zion is over the people of Yahweh who want to follow Torah, and specifically they want to believe that the land promised to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob is an eternal inheritance of the seed of Abraham, and the Messiah will fight for Zion. Okay, I got 7 more minutes. We'll see what we can cover in 7 minutes. Now, remember now that Esau wants to make the mountains of Israel his possession. And in Jeremiah 30 verse 17 it says, I will restore health unto you. The health is the end of the exile. And I will heal you of your wound. The wound is the exile, says Yahweh. Because they called you an outcast, saying, this is Zion, which no man seeks after. If you look at this in the Hebrew, you get a word picture. Right, Brad? In Hebrew, you get a word picture. And so what it says, they called, is the Hebrew word kara, and here's what the word kara means. It means to approach and to speak to in a challenging or an aggressive way. An outcast, this is Strong's number 5080, it means to drive out or to expel. So here's what it says. I will restore health unto you, and I will heal you of your wounds, says Yahweh. Because they approached and spoke to you in a challenging and aggressive way to drive or expel you, saying, no one follows after you. Do you believe? Do you know that in the Gaza, Jews were approached in a challenging, aggressive way and said, you need to leave? Joel chapter 3, verse 6, in the day of Yahweh, the children of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have you served the Grecians that you might remove them from their border. The issue in the day of Yahweh is Jews are being removed from their homes. But it says you've sold them to the Grecians, or exiled, or you sold them to the Grecians. Well, is there a powerful country of Greece in the world that's telling the Jews to leave their homes? No. But you know why they're being told to leave their homes? So we can create a democratic PLO state. And where do we get democracy from? Greece. So they're being taken from their homes for the sake of democracy. The controversy of Zion is associated with Jacob's trouble. Jeremiah 30 verse 7, it's Jacob's trouble. In speaking about Jacob's trouble, that's when I'm going to restore health unto you and heal you of your wound. Saying, this is Zion which no man seeks after. And during Jacob's trouble, which is when he's going to restore health unto you, is when, Jeremiah 30 verse 3, Israel and Judah will return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they will possess it. When we start the next session, we will review major events of the Day of the Lord, and here they are, that I'm going to be sharing with you. Major events of the Day of the Lord is that the Gaza will be forsaken, because in the Day of the Lord, Day of Yahweh, Zephaniah chapter 1, verses 14 and 15, Zephaniah 2, 4, the Gaza is forsaken. In the book of Joel, chapter 1, verse 15, chapter 2, verse 1, in the Day of Yahweh, the land of Israel gets divided by the nations, Joel chapter 3, verse 2. In the Day of Yahweh, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 1, Jerusalem gets divided, Zechariah chapter 14, verse 2. And in the Day of Yahweh, Isaiah chapter 13, verse 6, Babylon falls. And we are going to be looking at those things when we do our last session. I'd like to end by reminding you that this teaching and all these slides are available for you if you want to review and share with your friends. I have a DVD out at the marketplace called Hebraic Bible Prophecy, and all these slides is 5 hours of teaching, and it puts everything together. And if you're interested in the DVD, the 5 hours of teaching, it's $40. The book, Two Houses, Restoring the Two Houses of Israel, is $20 if you just get the book. If you just get the book, it's $20. But if you get the DVD, the book will be free. So the DVD and the book are $40. And of course, you are not able to get that until Shabbat is over, which is this evening. So I hope that this is helping you to understand why this message of the two houses is so important, and this is what the restoration of the kingdom is, and why it's such an important thing, and how it relates and pertains to the things that are happening in the world even now. Thank you very much.
Okay.